Everybody, welcome again to the Digital Freedom Fund speaker series. And today we will have, did Germany really outlaw Facebook's business model to understand the impact of the Federal Supreme Court's decision? We invited today Miriam Beitzen. And well, first of all, you know the rules for those of you who are back today. Well, let me maybe present myself. First of all, I'm AC Coppens. I'm the founder of The Catalyst, which is a boutique agency based in Berlin. And we work on how science, innovation, and new technologies are shaping work and society. And that's why we have been invited by the Digital Freedom Fund to host this brand new series of talks, aiming at exploring how we can make a better use of the competition law framework to protect digital rights. So this speaker series approaches different issues like how to raise public interest concerns and make complaints count, how do tech giants actually justify their conduct and in the face of the criticism, and what can be learned from previous cases, and much more that is relating to curtailing platform power and make this know-how accessible beyond the expert spheres. I know that a lot of you are lawyers and experts in competition law. Well, I'm not. And that's why actually I'm the perfect moderator, hopefully, to ask questions. And you know you may ask questions. There are no stupid questions. We are in a very complex matter here. So no worries at all. Feel comfortable. And you can get acquainted more to the Digital Freedom Fund to see the framework of these series in the links. Melissa, who is here in the chat, you won't see her. She is hidden, just like the Digital Fund team. She will be on the chat and will push some interesting links for you during the talk. Those of you who have been already there know that. Now, a couple of housekeeping rules for everybody. Please make sure to be muted, but I think that everybody is muted anyway. Your camera is off for now. If you want later on to ask your question live, you may note it in your question like, oh, I would like to ask Miriam live directly in person. And then I will maybe, if your question is filtered, I will maybe invite you to come with us on stage, so to speak. When when you want to react to something, please gladly use the buttons, the reaction buttons on the button to your right. Otherwise, use the chat to write your questions even during the conversation so that you do not forget them. In the moment when you think of a very important question, go on. And later on, the questions are filtered anyway by experts. In case the question is still not answered later on, then I will pick your question, maybe a said. Yes, and otherwise, I think that's it for the housekeeping because it's really light and smooth here with Zoom. So we can start right now into the matter. Today, we have a very specific session today because we are taking a deep dive into a very specific decision from a national court. And it is therefore an example on how national enforcement of competition law has happened. And it is contrastful to what we had in the last 2 weeks. As we know, in the last 2 weeks, we're more EU and US focused. So this particular decision we're going to explore today is controversial since it had been interpreted as importing data protection law into competition law enforcement, which, of course, as you know, are two different distinct areas. So to make things really clear, we have invited Dr. Miriam Caroline Beitzen, Assistant Professor of Law and Economics at the University of St. Gallen. And our main focuses are technology, information law, law and digitization, antitrust law, legal economics, and data protection law. And she specializes her research in the regulation of digital platforms, but also in artificial intelligence. Super interesting. And this means she's not only an expert in competition law and policy in relation to digital markets, she has also expertise in data protection law and internet law more generally. That's why we thought it was a great idea to have her here for taking on big tech, generally speaking, in this series. And like Neef Dunn, some of you may have been here like 2 weeks ago with Neef. She was here. Miriam has explored the commonalities and differences between the role of competition law and data protection law regarding big data concerns. So she has drawn a distinction between privacy concerns, which are to be dealt with through data protection law, and concerns around market power based on data, which are to be dealt with through the competition law enforcement. So this is a great paper she's been reading. Maybe we can push this in the chat. So now, let us check this impact of the federal Supreme Court decision, which looked at whether Facebook has abused its dominant position in the social media market through its data processing, consolidation, and exploitation practice. So did Germany really outlaw Facebook's business model? And we will structure the conversation in three parts. So I will start to ask Miriam with case and impact on users. First part. Second part, it will be the impact on law and law enforcement regarding the data platforms. And the third part will be a broader view. We will open it up on more big tech cases or current regulatory instruments for taking on big tech, obviously. It's all about this in this series. And yes, I think we're going to start with Miriam. Miriam, it's fun because we had our preparation call on November the 25th, which is a special date, so to speak, because it was the turn of the Oberlandesgericht Düsseldorf, the first cartel senate, to examine the Facebook case, right? So first of all, maybe how did this case come to be? What is it all about? Tell us a little bit more, sum it up for us.
Yes, I will. Thank you, AC, and thank you also to the Digital Freedom Fund for inviting me to talk about this very interesting case. And so how did this all get started? In 2016, the German competition authority, the Bundeskartellamt, started investigating Facebook. And at the end of 2017, it found that Facebook had abused its dominance. Now, so far, nothing new under the sun. But the sort of spectacular part of this decision was that the Bundeskartellamt argued that Facebook had violated data protection law and that had constituted an abuse of a dominant position. So that was sort of revolutionary. That was why this case also raised so much attention and so much discussion. So the Bundeskartellamt said Facebook was not allowed to collect data on users, not only when they're using Facebook, but also on third-party websites and on other apps. So you have tons of websites that have a Facebook login button or a Facebook like button. And if as a Facebook user, you are on that website, then Facebook can collect your data, combine it with the data it collects on Facebook and use all of that to serve you more personalized content and more personalized advertisements. So that was the key issue for the German competition authority. And that was what it said was an abuse of dominance. And it based that on German case law. And it found that Facebook would be allowed to collect data on its own platform, but not elsewhere. And so it imposed a pretty heavy remedy. It said, Facebook, you have to stop this data collection on third-party sources. And at least for German users, you have to allow them to opt out of that.
Okay. So a small question for me just in between. So if they say that the main issue is the collection of data, then it is data protection law, right?
Right. So that was the interesting part of this case is that the German competition authority spent a lot of pages of the decision analyzing if data protection law had been violated. But it said because Facebook is dominant, this type of data collection would strengthen its dominance even further. And that is why it also constituted an abuse of a dominant position, because this specifies sort of an additional responsibility for firms with market power.
So this is where data problems are mixing up with competition problem. Data is like a product, basically. I mean, it is a tool, so to speak, to have more dominance, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was the problem, yes.
Okay, this is wonderful. So I understand this. And you have been describing this wonderfully in your paper. So now, I'm not sure if the question we ask here in this discussion, did Germany, et cetera, because it's not done yet, right? Well, what is the actual state of this case now, today, especially after the 25th of November, where they were supposed to examine the case again?
Yes. So here we have to distinguish two things. So you have to imagine when the German Competition Authority rendered this decision at the end of 2017, Facebook appealed. That was not surprising. But also Facebook did not want to have to implement this decision yet, as long as the proceedings were still ongoing. So it also asked for this remedy, for this to be suspended, essentially. So that is why there were these interim proceedings about the question, does Facebook have to now already change its business model, allow users to opt out of this third-party data collection? And that was what we had a decision on by the Supreme Court in June. So mm-hmm. just to recap, this was quite important also because a year ago, the regional court that had been in Düsseldorf, that court had been the first one to say something about this implementation. And they had, this was a major setback for the German Competition Authority because the court in Düsseldorf said, well, this decision or this argument doesn't specify clearly enough why this is an abuse of dominance or what is the competitive harm here. And so it suspended the decision. So that was a big win for Facebook. And now in June, when the Supreme Court came and ruled in this, that was a big turnaround because the Supreme Court said, no, German Competition Authority, you can go ahead and order Facebook to implement your decision because we do not see serious doubts that there was no abuse of dominance here. And then on top of that, and that is also what makes this decision so interesting, is that the Supreme Court already went quite deeply into the actual merits of the case. It's no guarantee yet of what will be the outcome, but it said first that the Bundeskartellamt's argumentation, well, it took quite a different approach. So it decided, well, the Bundeskartellamt can go ahead and implement this decision, but it took quite a different approach on why this behavior of Facebook would be an abuse of dominance. So the stage we're in now is that the main proceedings, they're going back to the court in Düsseldorf, and there was supposed to be a hearing on the 25th of November, but it's been pushed to March, which can be explained also by the fact that the Supreme Court went into this different direction. And so now everyone needs to prepare for that. And then afterwards, it could be that the Supreme Court again has to say something about it if Facebook or the Bundeskartellamt were to appeal. So the main proceedings aren't done yet. We don't have a final decision, but the case, at least there's hope for the German Competition Authority again for this case. Which makes it quite a relevant decision that we had over the summer. And it means that the decision can be implemented now.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because last week with Konstantinos, we were speaking like, why does it take so long? And this is also something that Neef was evoking 2 weeks ago, like, oh, it takes ages. So why does it take so long? Why is it postponed? Why did it have the time until the 25th of November to examine this? Why is it so complex?
Yes, well, that is a bit of a tricky part of competition law proceedings. I mean, often they are quite complicated. It needs to be determined what is the theory of harm here? Is there harm to competition? All of the parties need to be prepared. And yeah, one could say that's what's been discussed also already last week. Maybe this tool is sometimes too slow when we think of digital markets, because by the time that Facebook needs to implement this, it might have already gained more market power and become bigger. And so maybe the remedy won't be so effective anymore by the time that it needs to be implemented. So yes, well, yeah, it is a bit of a problem. Why? Yeah, I think because everyone needs to, the company needs to be able to defend itself. The competition authority needs to be prepared. The court needs time to go through everything. So this is why it takes quite long, yes.
Mm. So now let us have a look at the impact on us, maybe. Like, why should individual users like you and me and the people in the chat, this time not as lawyers, right, but just as normal human beings, so to speak, why should they care about this decision? What will it make any difference at all to their lives?
Well, for German users of Facebook, there is a direct impact of the decision because it means that now it can be, the decision can be implemented. So that would mean that Facebook users should have the choice of not having their data collected on all of these other websites outside Facebook. So that is the direct impact for German Facebook users. We'll still have to see what happens in the main proceedings, and Facebook has some time to implement the decision, so maybe this will overlap a little bit, but that is the direct impact for German users. Now, generally, though, I think for everyone using social media, it is, well, of course, as a researcher on this topic, I think everyone should be interested in this, but I also understand people have other things in their life to do, but yes, I do think it is important for everyone to think of what is going on these platforms, what is happening to my data, and what data am I actually sharing, and what is all being collected about me. So in that sense, I think the decision, but also the investigation is important for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I would love to know, like I was talking about the people being like normal people. Now, I would like to know, can we send a little poll to everybody and ask them if they use it, if you use Facebook and WhatsApp and Insta and all this kind of thing? Yes, please. I hope that everybody's seeing this. Can you please answer this little poll? We are not collecting the data, no worries. We are not relating it to your names. Don't worry at all. We are with lawyers. So nothing is going to happen to your data. Come on and please vote. There are a couple of you here. We're nearly 30. So please, let's make this. It's not really representative, but let's have fun. WhatsApp, which is already Facebook, as we know. Mm-hmm. Instagram for business. Yes, that's not really the tool of choice for you. Insta for personal use, okay. Facebook for business, neither. Facebook for personal use, 67%. Okay, two-thirds on Facebook, two-thirds on Insta, and nearly 90% on WhatsApp. So let's move on now and see about this impact on law and law enforcement in terms of data platforms. What do you think, Miriam, will be the impact of this decision on how competition law enforcement approaches data-rich platforms? And maybe you can also define what is a data-rich platform? Yes, and do you think the theory of harm we'll put forward in this case will play a role in future computation cases, maybe across Europe, whether domestically or regionally? So first, the impact and the data-rich platforms, maybe.
Yes, I was just going to unpack that. So indeed, yes. So first, what are these data rich platforms? I find it always interesting to see a poll like this. I often ask groups or students or listeners that exact question. Sometimes I'm a little bit sneaky and I first ask them, how important do you find your privacy? And then a little bit later, I ask everyone, on how many social media networks are you? Right. And then it sometimes comes out that people are maybe a little bit inconsistent, all saying that they find their privacy very important, but they're all also on these platforms. Right. So I think that is the first thing that I think it shows what we see now in the poll as well, what is sometimes called the privacy paradox. And we all say we find our privacy important, but we also share our data a lot. So the question is then, do we not care? Why is that, right? Why are we sharing all this data? And one reason might be that we're just not so aware what's happening with our data, that mm-hmm. it's just being collected without our knowledge. So that I think is one problem, right? The market for this data might not be working so well. It's not that we believe that the services we're getting is simply worth all the data that we're giving out, but maybe we cannot oversee the consequences. So just first with these data-rich platforms, so that is one aspect. Data are involved in all of these services. And then the other aspect is, of course, that we get these services for free. Right. And that is what is then often called we're paying with our data. I prefer to think of that in a little bit differently because, well, with data-rich platforms, yes, we are not paying any price. And yes, these platforms collect our data, but other than euros, I can give away my data over and over again to different parties. So it's not as much I am paying with my data, but it is more that what is sometimes called, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, right? To put that a bit more generally, for platforms, it is crucial that we spend a lot of time on this platform so that they can collect more data on us, serve us more advertisements.
Make more profit.
Exactly. These advertisements generate more profit if they can be targeted at us personally. Also, data might be sold to third parties directly.
To make more profit?
All of this to make more profit. Yes. So I think that is one thing to really be aware of, is that the reason that these platforms are data machines is because that is core to their business model. And this is really a fundamental difference with sort of traditional markets. Right. So other than, yeah, of course, when these platforms are big, we might be more worried that when they collect our data. It's a difference if the bakery on the corner here asks for my address to send me vouchers for a discount, or if Google collects more data. If you really think about what Google knows about you when you use Google Search, Gmail, Google Maps, it is quite frightening when you think about it, right? Sometimes I think the incognito view Google searches are sort of like a secret diary of everyone, and Google knows, right? So
absolutely.
All of this, yeah. So this is, I think, the big picture that we have with this data-rich platforms. Now, what is it? How does it all tie into competition and dominance, right? So a lot of this is about privacy. But these platforms also tend to become very big, very powerful. And that is also something we see, like now in the poll, why are 90% of us on WhatsApp, right? Because, well, we could say we are no longer on WhatsApp, but we would need everyone that we want to talk to convince, we would need to convince them to use another means of communication too. And so I have Threema, I have Telegram. These are much more privacy-friendly alternatives to WhatsApp. And I have them installed on my phone and I use them with some close friends, with my husband. But most of my friends and family are not on Threema or Telegram, so I continue to use WhatsApp, right? So this is really the core of it, is that these platforms are their networks. And so that sort of can lead to this lock-in effect that we don't change to another platform.
Exactly. I have the same problem than you with families and et cetera. Yes.
Yeah, so this is, I think, the other key aspect. So we have the data-rich aspect of these platforms, right? And then we have the fact that there is these network effects and also economies of scale. So platforms that are already big tend to become even bigger. And it's these things that come together in digital markets and that raise competition problems. They raise problems for what the information we see, right? It's becoming much broader now, what we see in elections, the impact of the information that's personalized that people see on Facebook, for example, and that might be their main source of information. So it has a lot of broader problems, and some of them, or maybe also a lot of them, tie into the dominance of these companies. And those relate to the characteristics of these markets, that there are network effects, there are strong economies of scale, and there are increasing returns to data.
Right.
Yes. So this is what we're dealing with.
Exactly. So let us go now to this theory of harm. Tell me more about this.
Yes. So is it going to be a blueprint for Europe, what's been done in this Facebook case? Mm-hmm. To that, I would say, well, what the Bundeskartellamt did, probably no. This was tied to German case law. So this possibility to rely on a violation of another law to find an abuse of a dominant position in competition law, that was very specific to the German legal context. What the Supreme Court is arguing, that I could see being done elsewhere as well. So with theories of harm, it's important to distinguish. So the competition authority always has to argue, why does this harm competition? And then there's sort of the usual suspects of things that might be problematic. And a lot of those are about excluding competitors, right? So they are about actions of dominant companies that may push competitors out of the market, or that may make it harder for them to compete. And then there are some abuses that are directly about exploiting consumers. And those have been less used in the past. It's also a bit more controversial what competition law should be doing about that. Or, for example, are the prices too high? How is a competition authority supposed to determine what a too high price is? That's much harder than saying, hey, you are, for example, like Microsoft, the Microsoft cases, you are bundling the Windows Media Player with your Microsoft system. And so that means that every PC has Windows Media Player pre-installed on it. And that means that others offering maybe better media players than Windows Media Player have a really hard time getting a foothold in that market. Right? So this is sort of a little bit easier to argue. And these are what's called exclusionary abuses. This is about excluding competitors. And what we see here, at least at first, was this exploitative aspect. You are exploiting consumers, and that is an abuse of dominance. And now the Supreme Court in Germany has taken a bit of a different route. What they're arguing, you might see that as a bit closer to tying and bundling. So what is the Supreme Court saying? They're saying consumers, on users of Facebook, they don't have a choice. So they might want the Facebook experience. They might want to use Facebook, but instead they're getting this highly personalized service where their data are being collected everywhere, also when they're not on Facebook, and they're all used to personalized content and personalized advertisements. And so they're basically pushed into this additional service that they didn't ask for, and they cannot opt out of it. So consumers don't have a choice, and they might also be locked in. And this is problematic not only because it exploits consumers, but also because it may be harder for competitors to get a foothold in the market that way. So what the Supreme Court has been arguing is closer to sort of what we know as traditional theories of harm. So I could imagine that will be taken up in other cases as well, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yes.
By the way, you just have been mentioning media player, and we will have this a little bit more detailed next week with Thomas Vanier. For those of you who want to come next week, we're going to explore this. And Thomas Vanier is specialized in European antitrust and intellectual property law. And he has also a specific focus on technology. So it will be interesting to take it. I notice, now that I dig into competition law cases and et cetera, I notice like some stuff are coming recurrently because they are very hot and interesting. And that's why we're so interested also in the Facebook case. But if we look now more broadly at competition law and policy as it applies to digital markets and not only Facebook, what role do you believe data protection law should actually play in enforcement action going forward? Or in other words, maybe is there a place for raising privacy and other digital rights concerns in competition law enforcement, especially in the tech space?
Yes. Yeah. So both have a role to play, right? I do think that privacy has a role to play also in competition law, but we shouldn't forget that there is data protection law as well, right? That might in some cases deal with it more easily. So I was quite critical of the argumentation of the Bundeskartellamt, because I think, well, if you find a violation of the GDPR, of the General Data Protection Regulation, then, well, why not give a fine based on that, right? Violating the data protection regulation in itself should be reason to just to get a fine. But instead, the Bundeskartellamt said, no, this is also an abuse of dominance. And so how can we disentangle that, right? I think, for example, in merger cases, it is quite clear that we have to look at privacy issues. The merger between Facebook and WhatsApp is really an infamous example, where Facebook initially had promised to keep the data shared or to keep the services shared, and that it wouldn't be technically possible to integrate it. And then it became clear not long afterwards that it was actually possible, and that it was also Facebook had an interest in doing it and did it, right? So when we're not paying a monetary price anymore, then I think in mergers, absolutely, we should look at other forms of consumer harm, and harm to privacy is really a key area where consumers may be harmed. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, privacy, I think, should take a role in competition law enforcement. Now, in abuse of dominance cases, this could also be the case, but I think it's a little bit more tricky. So when we talk about what is an excessive amount of data collection, it's not so easy to establish. And we have, of course, rules in data protection law that say this is what you're allowed to do with data and this is what you're not allowed to do with data. Now, if this framework is working well, that's another question. We don't have the GDPR for that long, but I think we are already seeing that maybe for dominant companies, it is not enough, right? Maybe for dominant companies, we need this special responsibility just laid down in a regulatory framework, which is exactly what the European Commission is discussing now, but we can talk about that a little bit later. But so in data protection law, the difference is that firms are targeted across the board, right? So data protection law applies to everyone. And the advantage of competition law is that you can target one individual firm. So these huge fines, these billion euro fines that Google or Amazon get, this is only these big firms and not lots of small firms. So it makes sense mm-hmm. that in a regulation, you maybe don't want to include that kind of strong sanctions also for small firms, right? Because maybe that would really sort of scare them off or chill innovation and chill entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. But still, if you think about it, why in the GDPR is there a 4% fine as a maximum, a 4% of the worldwide turnover fine, whereas in competition law, it can be up to 10%. Right? In this digital era, we can ask, so why? Why is there that difference? I mean, it would make sense that these days a data protection authority would have the same reputation for being tough as a competition authority, would be as proactive in going after companies, maybe also really on a European level instead of per member state. So I think it makes also sense that competition law takes up these issues if they cannot be prudently dealt with in data protection law, but maybe one conclusion is that we just need to strengthen privacy law or data protection law, and especially strengthen enforcement of that, that might make more sense.
Absolutely, because I think on the side of big tech, it's not going to get better. I was just reading the other day, I don't know if you read the excellent article of technology in the New York Times. They have a specific newsletter just for technology every week, which is wonderful. And I think this week was that WhatsApp, well, every day, I can't even remember, WhatsApp is now opening like some selling options. So for the 90% of us here, or of you, whoever, beware, the ads are coming and you will be able to sell, really. Like, anyway, so yes, it's good. You have worked forever. I mean, everybody in the room into competition law, data privacy, you're wonderful. You have a bright future. So let us have a look maybe for the third part before we open up for the questions. I saw that there are a couple of questions coming up already. Let's have a look maybe, are there any more big tech cases happening now which are unclear or which are postponed because it takes time and etc. I'm thinking maybe Amazon or Google stuff going on. Can you tell us a little bit more about further cases?
Yeah, so also there are some ongoing cases. I think, well, so there is an Amazon investigation that was just announced. So it's not unclear in the sense that it just started, but I think it is very interesting. It is about Amazon as a dual role. So it's Amazon, of course, it operates its marketplace, but at the same time, it also competes on this marketplace. And so here we see that on the European level, the approach is still a bit different from what we're seeing in Germany now. And so here the allegation is that Amazon, of course, it has a lot of data, sensitive business data on competitors on the marketplace, that it uses these to improve its own position as a competitor, right? So it uses its role as a market operator to benefit itself as a competitor on the marketplace. And that reminds us a bit of the Google shopping case The Google Shopping case was also about the self-preferencing. So I think self-preferencing is really something that competition, the European Commission's competition division is after right now. Saying, well, as a dominant company, you cannot use your advantages as a platform in other markets, essentially.
So before I see more questions coming up, it's going to get really interesting. Before I lose my privilege as a moderator, I want a last question, but because I would love to know if you think, or what do you think about the current regulatory instruments for taking on big tech? Are competition law and data protection law actually enough? And when you already suggested before, we need more, we more to strengthen data protection law, but what do we need more? You know, a broader view on this.
Yes, I think it's really interesting how the debate has shifted in the last couple of years. I mean, it's really a lot going on in competition law. So it was like, okay, we need to go after dominant companies, a number of abuse of dominance cases, but at the same time, this discussion of, well, we need more merger control, because how can it be that GAFAM are there? They are taking over hundreds of companies all the time, and then we wonder that they're abusing their dominance. Maybe we should stop them becoming more dominant at the source, right? So then there's this discussion in competition law of strengthening the tools there. And now we're shifting to, well, if the problem is not with one particular firm in this digital market, but actually we see it with all the big dominant platforms, maybe we should be doing something against all of them, instead of competition authorities spending lots of resources with investigations into each company. Lengthy proceedings, maybe we should be looking at a regulatory tool that just specifies what platforms are and are not allowed to do. So I could well imagine that one of these things, well, that's also what's been hinted at, right? That one of these things will be that you cannot do self-preferencing when you're a platform, but you're also active on that platform. So I think this is very important, and it's some say, well, it can be a sunset regulation, something that runs out at some point, so that it's not too sort of interventionist or too harsh. But I think it's really important to start looking at these things to be able to cut off this behavior sooner, because if proceedings take very long and companies don't really implement, then maybe by the time that it's finally happening, the impact is very small, because that platform has already managed to establish itself in that other market. So with Google Shopping, right, if Google presents Google Shopping prominently enough for a long enough time, then at some point, maybe we're all just using Google Shopping and no longer other price comparison tools. So we need to act faster. And for that, I think a regulatory tool could be very helpful.
Yeah, I think it has also a lot to do with education. I'm thinking about all the next generation coming up, which is swimming in digital stuff, that they need to learn how to detect this kind of thing, be aware of what's happening. Well, thank you very much, Myriam. I think I need to give some more room to the participants here who are starting to ask a question. And I think the first question I saw coming up was, the German decision, referring to Facebook earlier, does this German decision open up the possibility for individual or mass damages claims by the users of Facebook?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So we have a European framework, right, for damages actions based on antitrust infringements. But mostly this has been used in cartel cases. So technically, yes. Are we likely to see it? I mean, it would probably be difficult to quantify the harm exactly. I think that would be a very tricky thing. So yes, could they? Yes, I think they could. Mm-hmm. And I mean, well, as I said, in the cartel context, we've seen now that business has started to boom a little bit. So companies just also collecting all of these claims. But even then, we've seen that it's mostly bigger companies going after other companies and not so much consumers. So as a user, the question is, so what can you get out of a case like that? I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't, right? I think it's definitely a helpful tool. But how much we're going to see it, I am not exactly sure, because, well, you'd have to prove exactly what kind of harm you've suffered. So it could happen, but I think that would more be something, let's say it could be a helpful tool for compensation of harm if you manage to prove that, but I'm not sure if it's going to be another real stick for the companies to fear in terms of damage. But maybe in a few years, I'll have to say that I was totally wrong and we've seen massive claims against Facebook.
Oh, well, it would not be bad, right?
No, so I'm not being wrong on that one.
Exactly. So I have another question here from another participant. Ines, does this German decision provide any guidance on collecting data from children specifically, or did it take a sweeping approach to data subjects?
Well, as to the children, I'm over asked here, but what it did do, what the Supreme Court did do, is invoke the fundamental right to be able to decide on what happens with your data. What in German is so nicely called informationelle Selbstbestimmung. So this is what the Supreme Court did, and arguably it's not often that a court in a competition law case so explicitly refers to fundamental rights. So this, I think, is very interesting. So the court said, well, we all have a right to determine what happens with our data. And when a dominant company simply leaves you no choice and collects very extensive data about you, then this is abusive and problematic for that reason as well. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it's the whole fundamental right aspect and your right to privacy is definitely a factor in this case.
Mm-hmm. And did the German courts focus on exploitation of user data, or did they actually also look at the potential abuse, maybe even exclusionary abuse, in advertising market upstream?
So the Bundeskartellamt decision looked primarily at the exploitation of users. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the fact that users don't really have a choice, the fact that users don't know what's happening with their data. Now in the Supreme Court decision there, it is also looking at this possibility of competitors being excluded. And it does acknowledge, right, that there is this market for advertisers, and there's the aspect of the users. Mm-hmm. With advertisement, of course, like companies like Facebook have been arguing that in fact they are all attention platforms, and so they're all competing with each other for advertisers, and so that they couldn't possibly be dominant. At least these arguments have been brought forward by dominant companies in several contexts, and this is something that the Supreme Court did not go along with. So it mm-hmm. still, I think, was focusing on right on the service that Facebook is delivering to users and the dominance it has there. So that for users, it's an important instrument, means of communication, an important social medium, and that there Facebook is dominant. So yes, mm-hmm. the advertisement angle is also relevant, but I think this case still focuses on the user side, so to say.
Yeah. And talking about the users, we were seeing that 90% of us are, in WhatsApp and et cetera, way more than the number of us who are actually on Facebook. So should the WhatsApp users here among us, so 90%, should we still be concerned with the Facebook-WhatsApp merger? What impact, if there is any impact, what impact might this Facebook case have also on the WhatsApp business model? Especially telling you now that the New York Times were referring that the WhatsApp business model is actually taking on the Facebook business model.
Yes, I was also, it was good that you mentioned it. I was sort of also astonished to read what is going to happen there. Maybe this is a good time to start a little campaign in all of our social circles to move to Telegram or to Threema, or I'm open to suggestions if any of you know about other of these messengers. Maybe it is a good time to do it. I honestly, we'll have to see what happens. So if you don't have a Facebook account, I am presuming, but here we are, like I am also not sure that Facebook is not collecting data, for example, if you're on any of these websites with a Facebook button. But if maybe the nature of WhatsApp is going to change, I'm sure they'll find ways to collect more data about us. That is, I absolutely think so. Maybe And so we'll have to see, honestly, what is going to happen. And then this would be relevant. But we have to remind ourselves that the decision of the Supreme Court is only going to be relevant for German users. So outside of Germany, it's unlikely to follow a similar approach, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Threema is Swiss, right? Are they? Or German? I can't even remember. I know that Telegram is Russian. I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not going to enter these debates now. Anyway, Telegram and Threema are definitely better in terms of security. I mean, in our job, we have a lot to do with data, data privacy, artificial intelligence also, and et cetera. And definitely, this is the resonance that they have. So I do not get any commission if I forward to Telegram and Threema. But anyway, do we have more questions? Come on, guys, we have a fantastic expert here with us. We still have 11 minutes. So if you have a question, don't be shy. We don't even ask you to come on camera. I mean, if you want to come on camera, you can come with us on stage, but you don't have to. So in case you want to ask a question, oh, I have one other question. This is wonderful. How likely is it that the decision against Facebook will be applied against internet platforms with a similar business model, YouTube, Google, etc.? I mean, YouTube and Google, yeah.
Well, so that's exactly what we see is maybe the limit. It's at the same time the power or the strength, but also the limitation of these competition law investigations is that this would mean another investigation into another company to go after the same thing. So I think, well, so Facebook is collecting all of these data off Facebook, right? That was the crucial aspect. The Bundeskartellamt said, users know when they are on Facebook, data are collected there, whatever information they share, but they don't know that it's happening outside of there as well. So we have to think of examples where this happens as well. For me, Google comes to mind. Of course, Google really has a very broad range of data about this, or rather Alphabet, when we think of all the different services that they have. So that could be a way forward. I think, though, that we'll first see what's going to happen with the Digital Services Act and all of the initiatives on the European level to curtail what platforms can do. So mm-hmm. I would think that is the first thing we're going to see. And maybe after that, we would see more decisions coming from the German Competition Authority. I mean, the German Competition Authority definitely is really proactive here and really also is daring to just take up cases like this. So I don't exclude the possibility, but I mean, so applying the case, it would have to just be a new case. So we'd have to think of situations similar to that. And I think so with Google, I mean, these are clearly different services, but I'm sure they're integrating data from different sources as well in ways that we might all not be aware about. So yes, so maybe we'll see this, but maybe it will be more effective to just start with a regulatory tool first to limit all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I still have one question also from my end, like about the role of privacy in competition enforcement, because you mentioned that you believe privacy has a greater relevance in merger cases. So how might privacy and data protection activists and advocates get involved in merger cases like Facebook, WhatsApp, and Google, Fitbit, and we can go on with those cases coming up, right?
Yes. So how can data rights activists? Well, I think the probably the key thing that data rights activists can do is raise awareness for everything that's going on platforms. Yes. And when it comes to mergers, it is tricky. I think competition authorities have struggled with it a bit, and obviously they've learned now, and I'm sure they would go about these type of cases maybe a little bit differently in the future. I think how we deal with privacy and merger cases is probably something that we have to think about what kind of things can competition authorities take into account when they are reviewing a merger. And right now it is basically the competition authority that has to show that there are any problems with the merger. So some have suggested maybe we should turn that around, right? Maybe we should just start out with, well, you're not allowed to merge, prove us that it's helpful that you're merging. But I mean, clearly that would be quite an invasion of sort of the liberty of companies to do their business the way they want to. And also, right, for small companies, if you are thinking of starting an app, the prospect of maybe down the line being taken over by a dominant big platform and sort of cashing in from that, that's also a good driver of innovation. So there are a lot of things at play here. And I think, so what can data protection lawyers, data activists, or data privacy activists do? I really think it is about you and me users just getting more awareness of what is going on. Maybe it is not about not sharing any data anymore, but to me, everything that I put into Google, everything that I post on Instagram, I presume that that is, well, Google Gmail, maybe it's a different thing, but everything I post on Instagram, I presume it's public knowledge. I think we just have to be very aware that these are companies, self-interested companies, that are trying to maximize their profits.
Absolutely. So we have a new question. Ah, now we have many questions. And I still had one question. Okay. So I have a question of Maria Luisa. Are you aware, could you share with us any other case where the violation of certain rules that protect users by dominant players has been interpreted as an exploitative abuse?
Right. So the cases that the Bundeskartellamt relied on were German cases. The one is called VBL, or I should say the English VBL Gegenwert, and that was a case in which consumer law was invoked. So this relies on German national case law. This idea of a violation of a law constitutes an abuse of dominance under certain conditions only.
Mm-hmm. And another question of Kostin, did the Bundeskartellamt and or the Supreme Court go into more detail about the standard of consent and how this should be implemented by Facebook, or merely briefly referred to the GDPR in this context?
Well, so they did say that, so it's about voluntary consent, they said. So can you, and of course, this is tricky, right? Because, I mean, this has also been discussed with the GDPR in general. What is voluntary consent? I mean, we all know that we're getting services in exchange for some data collection. So if we could just say, well, we want the free service, but we don't want any data collection, then obviously this business model wouldn't work. So the Bundeskartellamt said, well, it's about, there has to be some choice in what data can be collected about you. So it's not voluntary here because it's very extensive data collection and you don't have any choice in it.
Okay. And another question, how much does this decision really hurt Facebook in terms of revenue and market position? Does this in any way increase the possibility of entry?
Yes, that is, I think, one of the key things. Well, so Facebook has argued that it would cost a couple of million euros to implement the decision, and also that it would hurt innovation, and that it, they argue basically that this would all be very difficult, and the Supreme Court did not go for that. They basically said, well, then it will cost you some money. So, I mean, here, I think the biggest thing for Facebook is that remedy that they have to change their data collection model. And that's also, of course, a strength of competition law, because we know that fines are not always, don't always really impact companies that much.
Okay, I just check if we have, we have somebody saying like working in compliance in the financial sector, just very interesting in data and human rights. That's perfect, because this is what is actually binding us all here. So for those of you who want to come, first of all, sorry. Thank you so much, Miriam. It was so fascinating. I would love to go on with the discussion. Really good. I mean, really, I'm not at all into this, and I'm digging every week deeper into competition law. One of the speakers even told me like, I'm going to convert you. And I'm like, yes, actually, I like this. I like this theme. Thank you, Miriam, for bringing us further in this case. And next week, I was already in evoking it. I was saying that it is Thomas Vanya. I think it is the right way to say the name. And it will be about learning from the landmark Microsoft and Google shopping cases, which Miriam was also evoking today. What do they mean for big tech today? So we're going to go on with taking on big tech. Same time, same place, so to speak. So don't miss it. It will be next week. And I think that's it, right? Yes, thank you very much for those applauding, especially to Miriam. I'm applauding myself here. I don't need a reaction button. Let's make it human. Thank you so much to all of you for your great questions also. And let's take on big tech next week again. See
thank
you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.